actuarial condition right now and the impact that these changes would have on that condition. Presumably that's something that the PARA can provide to you. Number five is the degree of support by interested parties. I would assume the commission would want to hear testimony from those various groups. Six is Age Discrimination Act issues. What we note in the memo is that back in 93, various pension plans, one of which was PARA, revised their laws in an effort to comply with the Age Discrimination Act. And the MSRS plans and the TRA plans also adopted some language that stated that when a disability becomes age 65 or 5 years after the anniversary of disability, whichever is later, the individual would at that date transfer to retirement. PARA, with the police and fire plan, took a different position and repealed its transfer to retirement provision. PARA is proposing now in this in these bills to reinstate a transfer provision, and it would be at age 55 rather than 65. So there's a question as to whether the direction we're going is correct, whether we're finally capturing the actions that are needed to be compliant with the ADA. And there's also the questions that would have on members who are transferred. There's a general question as to whether this would be number eight, is whether these various changes can be deemed to be fair. That ties into number nine, which is whether or not there are sufficient categories. Right now, the bill would create one treatment for duty disabilities and another treatment for regular disabilities. And an issue we raise is that, especially given that benefits are going to be pulled back compared to what we have in present law, whether that is fair to all categories of individuals, and therefore there might be a need to create new categories, some different categories beyond what's proposed here. One category would be for individuals who are severely disabled. Severely disabled need a more stringent definition of disability that is used in the PARA general plan rather than the public safety plan. And perhaps there is a need to create some a separate category for those individuals, provide them with more generous treatment than is proposed in the bills in order to be fair to these various groups. Let me move to 10, where is cost shifting issues. And what we note here in the memo is that PARA Police and Fire is a multi-employer plan. Therefore, if you have a certain employing unit that is creating or leading to an awful lot of individuals from that employer applying for PARA Police and Fire disabilities, that's really shifting the cost of the disabilities of that employer to all employers under the plan. And perhaps what the commission might want to consider is some amendments to try to make some of these costs more specific to the employer to try to get those employers to try to find continuing employment for these individuals and to also try to reduce the cost burden on PARA Police and Fire. Number 12 is early retirement reductions. What I mentioned earlier is that those revisions would apply to all individuals, not just to disabilities. Cost savings, the scope of that change may be a bit beyond what is really needed here. Number 13 is the removal of the military duty language. Members who have been on the commission for a few years will remember 2 or 3 years ago when the commission dealt with the St. Louis Park St. Louis Park police officer was on military duty, was killed in Iraq, but the individual did not have a sufficient marriage to qualify for a survivor benefit for the surviving spouse. There was some language in the law, not something that the Pension Commission looked at, though. It was not an approach that the Commission had approved or recommended. In any event, it did get put into general law through an Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources bill. PARA is proposing to remove that, depending on how people feel on that issue. The Commission may wish to consider an amendment. 14 is there is a provision disallowing disability for drug use. This proposal has merit, but I do raise it as a policy issue because it is new ground. This type of provision is not in PARA or in any other of our statewide public safety plan, so it is breaking new policy here, so the Commission may wish to give to that particular section. 16 is the question of whether there's sufficient need to revise the PARA local government correctional plan provisions. As I mentioned earlier, PARA is proposing to adopt new definitions there. While they're not changing benefits, it would change prospectively who could qualify for a disability or regular benefit. So the Commission may wish to look at the PARA correctional plan, see if there is a sufficient problem there needing it. If the Commission doesn't feel there is, the Commission may wish to consider some amendments to remove those provisions from the bills. Starting on page 8 and going on for a few pages is a description of various amendments that I have prepared for your consideration. I will review those. You can read them as you hear testimony. And with those comments, I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thank you. Ms. Vanek.
Madam Chair and members, Mary Vanek, the Director of PERA. Thank you for taking the time to review this bill. As I noted to you earlier in an email, this is a culmination of several years of study on the disability issues. And I'm going to highlight some of the experience we've had over those years just to draw your attention to why it is a concern and recent court cases. First of all, it would be remiss not to draw attention to the contribution requirements of the plan. The legislature authorized contribution increases for the police and fire plan in 2005. They are scheduled to move up to a total of 23.5% shared 40-60 between members and employers by January 1st, 2009. But as you see in the right-hand column, the total required contribution currently is 25.57%. And because we are not getting up to our required contribution fast enough, there's the potential that requirement could grow as a result of additional supplemental contributions needed to pay off an unfunded liability. And so where we are headed with contributions currently are not going to be sufficient to pay for the cost of the plan. And so we're going to have to keep an eye on that and come back and address that issue. On the next page, page 2 at the top, I'm not going to read all this, but I put in there for you the policy statement at the beginning of the police and fire benefit plan. The legislature adopted the special benefits of this plan because of the hazardous nature of the jobs that these public safety personnel are involved in. And they recognize that there are particular dangers inherent in these occupations, which is why these benefits were created as they were. They have been enhanced over the years as the funding of the plan became more than sufficient, more than 100%. But what we also experienced as the benefits improved and the funding was in excess of 100%, is that we were starting to recognize more use of particularly the disability program. The bottom slide I bring to your attention because in a recent Supreme Court decision, they did call attention to the fact that our in-the-line-of-duty disability definition refers to something that arises out of any active duty. And the board has always interpreted duty-related disabilities as meaning to apply to those injuries or those diseases that are contracted in the as a result of the more hazardous activities associated with these public safety positions. We tried to argue that case before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court made it clear in the decision that we cannot use references to the purpose statement to further define duty disability. If the legislature intends that duty disability is intended for more hazardous types of disabilities, the language should be incorporated into the definition of the statute. Likewise, in the not line of duty benefit, that's defined as an injury or illness that is contracted outside of work. So it can't be something non-hazardous that occurs on the job. We have attempted to read the law a little more broadly and bring that in. The Supreme Court said clearly we could not apply a non-duty disability standard to something that happened on the job. If the legislature intended that there's a different category for, say, an office work injury for a public safety position compared to an on-the-street or firefighting injury, then that needs to be specified in the law. So we have attempted to address that in our definitions that we've put forth in this bill. Before I get too far into that, one thing I'd like to address with respect to Mr. Burek's comments on the individual who generally works an office job. We've defined less frequent duties in our bill to say that if somebody has that category, which we've been told all public safety personnel have, there's other duties as assigned in which somebody who is normally working in the less hazardous activities is put on the street, is called out to work in those more hazardous activities, that if the injury would occur as a result of actually performing that less frequent duty, the duty definition is intended to apply. So we tried to cover our bases on that one. We'd like to draw attention to what we believe has contributed to the increase in the use of the police and fire benefits. Local plans began consolidating in 1987 through 1998. That increased the number of people at older ages who are now looking at a different benefit package if they chose para-police and fire benefits, and their plan allowed age 50 full retirement, and ours allowed age 55 full retirement. Disability was again an option for earlier. We had benefit improvements in 92. That's when we added an automatic survivor benefit for disability. People did not have to take a joint survivor reduced benefit to protect a spouse beginning in 1992 if they went on disability. 1993, the formula was improved from 2.5% to 2.65% for each year of service, and that also was the year when there was the representation that we needed to allow benefits to continue to age 65. We believe that was an incorrect interpretation. Our normal age retirement debt is defined at age 55. It was, however, not specifically defined in law, and so we've added that in this bill. We believe, based on our readings and our legal advisor's interpretation, is that if somebody has earned the minimum number of years of service included in these benefits and is normal retirement age, that the disability benefit does not provide any greater benefit than the retirement benefit, and so we don't have to allow someone to apply for the disability after normal retirement age. But that was changed in 1993 under a different assumption that we had to go to 65. In 1997, the benefit formula was improved to 3% a year, and in 1999, as part of the consolidation package, we lowered the reduction factor used for early retirement. So all of those were significant benefit improvements that occurred over the years that we also believe contributed to increased use of the benefit program, both early retirement and disability. The public safety officer's benefit was implemented in 1997. That was an incentive for people to qualify for a duty disability because then they would also receive paid health insurance till age 65. PARA was advised of a revenue ruling in late 2005 that we couldn't allow duty-related disabilities to be treated as tax-free for life. We did that unto ourselves, but it was a revenue ruling brought to our attention. We thought it was fair to extend it to our members who are out on these types of benefits. And then our recent court ruling through the Supreme Court in September 2006 has raised the concern because we have been spending up to $750,000 administratively to go to administrative law judges and have independent medical evaluations of applicants to try to ensure that when we approve benefits, we're doing it, we're making sure it meets the letter in the law. The Supreme Court basically said if somebody claims that they got injured on the job, we really shouldn't be, I believe, and I believe the board has come to the conclusion, why are we spending that much money administratively to challenge these when the Supreme Court says you go to work and you claim a disability for something that happened while you were at work, you qualify under the current language. And so we are concerned about what we're going to be facing going forward. If you look on page 4 quickly, I'm not going to go over through this in too much detail, but from 1985 to 1988, our experience analysis showed that based on the number of disabilities we were approving compared to what we expected, we were only realizing 71% of those expected. People were not applying for disability. By the 1997-2001 experience analysis, we were now seeing 180% of those that we expected would be going on disability were not actually using it. 2001 to 2005, it dropped back down to 125%. The disability mortality feature is interesting because what that tells us is that even though we're providing automatic survivor protection, because typically when somebody goes on disability, you expect that's going to be a life-shortening event and you want that spouse protected. Well, the 97 to 2001 study showed that we were only paying 25% of the people that we thought would be getting survivor benefits. In essence, these were not life-shortening disabilities. The survivors were not being paid because the member was living, and that's great news. But that's a, you know, you factor that into the cost of providing that benefit. Then the next chart simply shows you from 90 through 92 where we were, and then by 2000 to 2001, we had 224% disabilities approved compared to what we thought we were going to approve. As I say, it has come down in the most recent experience analysis, but with this new Supreme Court decision, we're concerned that we would expect to see it turn around again. The bill, as Mr. Beerick has explained, does put in definitions for a duty-related benefit. I know there's concern about the fact that it's broadly stated. Many of the people that I think you're going to hear from who are concerned about the provisions and don't necessarily want to see the bill proceed this year were at the table with us in 2003. We extracted definitions from various plans around the country and tried to cut and paste and make something that would work for Paramount of Minnesota. We couldn't get consensus. So we took from the Supreme Court direction and said, we'll take from our purpose statement, align that with our duty definition, and we will take it case by case in determining what would qualify as a hazardous or dangerous disability situation. We are capping benefits because we were asked by those who came to us and said, we need to address this. We're ready and willing to work with you. The only way you can realize the savings is to modify benefits. So we capped benefits. And we will save 0.8% of pay, which is $5 million a year to begin with. That's just on the disability provision. Now, that assumes that everybody who currently is on disability would have been under the cap. So we don't know if by defining duty-related disability, if that will reduce our utilization and therefore we'll have savings there. We didn't want to make those assumptions. That will have to play out through actual experience if we put this in place. We also know that there are disabilities that have been paid as duty that we believe would fall into the new regular definition. For example, working out in the gym to stay physically fit. We believe that would be a regular disability, not a duty disability. And I know that some of our members disagree with us on that, but they would have an appeals procedure to follow where if we have to go to the courts, we'll go to the courts and have that decision made. We are eliminating the automatic survivor coverage. As I mentioned to you, that's a cost item. It's not being used because these are not life-shortening disabilities. So eliminating that automatic survivor benefit is built into the 0.8% savings that is projected. We're converting disability to retirement at age 55, normal retirement age, or 5 years after the disability begins, if it begins, you know, if it's paid beyond age 55. That is typical in the plans that we studied throughout the country. Public safety plans most of them